Welcome back, Kansas City Underground. We are on episode 2 of the series within a series on building light, agile structures, thinking about how we build flexible organizational structures and teams that reflect often together. They innovate and they apply these emergent practices to aid in disciple making. So if you missed the episode last week, I'd encourage you to go back, pick up on that one, just to hear the intro from Corey and I's discussion on, is it Corey and I or Corey and I? Corey and I? Anyway, all that we talked about around what it means at an organizational level to build light, agile structures, but then also how we think about that within the microchurch or the everyday practices of a missionary. So,
and also our grammar, to be very flexible with our grammar.
Yes. Yes, be very
spooky Brian. You know, anyway, he's always secretly judging your grammar. Always know that.
I'm surprised that you waited that long to make a joke. Like you were. You
I'm a little slower. Right, I have a sinus infection.
Hey, welcome, Rob Wegner, regular contributor. Or at least you were like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You must be sorry. There's so many wonderful people to talk to, man.
Well, when we pulled up when we pulled up observation number 10 around organizational structures, I knew I was like, man, we got to talk to Rob on this one.
Nice.
Because it feels like this is in some way your jam.
It goes to 11, actually.
This one excites you.
It does. Because 11 is one louder.
It's one louder. They could all go to 11, but this one goes to 11.
This one goes to 11, man. 11, for, 11, 11. Okay.
For anyone that doesn't get that deep cut, sorry.
Look it up.
We're not explaining it. That's right. That's right.
That's what the internet is for.
All right. So something that comes to mind that I'd like to get into is the light load leader starfish, which we pull from. We pull that from Starfish in the Spirit, so your book with Lance Ford and Alan Hirsch.
Or the structure starfish, too, actually, is very relevant.
Yeah, I was thinking both of them. I just wasn't done with what I was saying.
Sorry. So, I'll shut up.
But I was also thinking, you know, when we were first forming the Kansas City Underground, I remember you often saying you were reading that book by Brian Sanders called The Underground, which is a really helpful book. And you'd say, man, I remember getting to chapter 6 where we talked about the umbrella organization. I think it was chapter 6 or chapter 9. And you're like, I thought, oh, no, you should just tell the story. I shouldn't tell your story.
I mean, it's funny. You read a book and the title of that one, of that chapter was governance. It's like, oh, this is going to be the worst chapter.
I can't wait.
And I was like, this is the best chapter in this book. I do jam out a little bit on structure because some of it's because of past pain. When things start to get moving, in other words, I've seen this happen in a few different contexts personally, and then in many, many other contexts, like when you're in a pre-existing structure and you're starting whatever you want to call it, a skunk works or a parallel pathway or a research and development where there's freedom, like, hey, what if we just help ordinary people become disciple makers and then plant the gospel? And what if simple expressions of the church popped up and they start to add or multiply? What I saw happen is eventually you get to a point where it demands a response from the pre-existing structure. And it becomes a prophetic witness. And then there's a question of, are we willing to restructure or are we going to release this or reject it? You know what I mean? And I've seen a lot of things get squelched when it's like, nope, we're not going to restructure. We have a structure and the structure itself, which is invisible, has a very visible effect on things, you know, and it can create like a missionally adverse environment without people really consciously knowing it, because we've inherited a certain structure for church that most people just, it's just a part of the normal social contract for most people. They're not even really thinking about it. And that's okay. I mean, it's not like people should walk around thinking about the structure of the church all the time or something, but it does matter. It does actually matter. And so that's why it's important to me. I'm like, we want to see God's people released into their maximum influence, which means eventually you have to have a structured conversation. I think if you're going to do something that has some kind of organizational identity, and if you don't, like, I know people who've got to hundreds of micro expressions and they refuse to have the organizational conversation. And I know two very influential people. I won't say their names out loud because I haven't asked permission. Both of them were like, and that actually ended up kind of killing the thing. Like it dispersed so far that we actually lost momentum and we didn't have a shared identity. And then there was a lot of weird identities and some of it got like assimilated back into predominant model church, and other parts became really angry and like pissed off about everything. And so there you go. There's just some opening thoughts.
I was going to say we went really far, really fast. I feel like sorry. We went from chapter 6 of the underground to networks dying really fast.
I said it. This is one of my jams. I do care about it.
I love it. We're gonna let's unpack all of that. Hopefully.
I just meant that is like a why we actually have to talk about this stuff. I think it.
Yeah.
You know,
one of the things we said last week was, this. We're trying to make a podcast here for ordinary disciple makers. We want to equip ordinary people. Yeah. And then there's sometimes we sort of float up into the clouds. But hopefully, you know, for people that are listening, it's like, we hope some of this, while it may sound like it floats into the clouds and it's just for people that are thinking about leadership and developing a network, it also can help ordinary people understand how they relate to that network.
Amen.
And why that structure relate is
to everybody in their life.
Yeah.
It really is about entering the original circle of the Trinity and going, how do the Father and the Son and the Spirit treat each other? How do they organize relationally? What does that look like? And then saying, this is the posture I want to bring into every relationship and every circle of relationships, whether it's my family, marriage, or my friendship circle, or so it has, it's like you said, it has a lot to do with the inner posture about how we approach everyone and everything. Am I conquering? Am I trying to control everything? Am I looking down? Or am I actually at people's feet serving? Am I curious? Am I open? Am I trying to be a catalyst for more beautiful things? You know, am I mutually submitting? Those are all structural questions, actually, in my mind, because they come out of the Trinity, the dance between the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And that's the circle at the center of the cosmos. Like, that is. So it's like, will we enter that dance, or are we going to try to build a pyramid? Circles roll, triangles do not. You get movement, that'll circle, but triangles going.
That'll probably be a reel. I'm gonna cut that one out. All right, so man, I'm trying to like wrap my head around all the stuff you've said and point this into some directions. So I mean, the main observation that we're hitting is that we have to think in agile, light ways. We have to be willing to innovate. We have to be willing to try new things. I love what you're saying about curiosity, being a learner, having that posture that listens to and responds to, rather than saying, no, it's this. You don't fit inside the little box. It's out. Maybe it's helpful. Why don't you kind of give an overview of the structure of Starfish then?
Talking about some of it, it's built on the idea that Fundamentally, the church is, it's not an institution. It's an organic system. You know, the metaphors we get are family, body, you know, a vine. And those are the metaphors that should be our defining metaphors instead of a corporation, a business, you know, a triangle hierarchy. Those were not the guiding metaphors that Jesus gave us. So in the structure of fart, starfish, I said fart, structure fart fish. Sorry. Wow. I have a sinus infection. My brain is on slow-mo. It's so the first part we talk about is called being circle celled. And so movements are, if you look at them, they're basically composed of many circles. It's like a fractal network of circles, and the circles are independently relating and they have some autonomy, but they're connected, like in a body. You know, like my fingers are connected to my hand, my hand's connected to my arm. But fundamentally, if you get all the way down to the body, we know it's actually all these cells that are connecting and relating and moving. And so getting back to that mindset of like, okay, the original structure is the Father and the Son and the Spirit, and it's this dance of love and mutual submission and joy and peace and shalom, and each pointing to the other and celebrating the other, and they're each distinct, but yet there's this oneness and this fullness. That's what we're being called into. Like that's where we've been adopted. That's where we're seated. That's where we've been placed. And how do we live that out? So the idea of primarily organic metaphors and circle cells and when you start thinking circles, it changes things. Because now, like, we're sitting together equally facing one another. And now we're seeking to not, it changes the role of the leader, I guess. It's like, now I'm becoming a facilitator. This is about conversation. It's about give and take and discovery versus like, I'm up here at the top of the pyramid and I'm directing and controlling and lecturing and ordering. Your role becomes that of like a guide, an elder, a catalyst. And you know, we're always being tempted, you know, the ego trap of a leader, you know, putting our identity into, you know, a hierarchy, a certain title, flawed definitions of success. And what we're trying to get at with the starfish structure is that everyone can become as powerful as possible, like that they can reach their maximum influence, and everybody's leading and everybody's following. There's not like a few leaders and then a bunch of followers. And we all have like someone who's right in front of us and someone who we're bringing along right behind us. And so not everybody will have the same level of influence, because the way some people are gifted and called, they have more influence than others, but we're all radically committed to everyone reaching their maximum influence, whatever that is. Hmm. So you think about it in terms of cells. Instead of control, you're trying to be catalytic. You're moving into this mindset of like spiritual parenting. So it's about eldership and guiding. Those are some of the things that come to mind when we talk about structure. So think about it like a family, an organic system, and we want everybody to become a successful parent with their own family, birthing another family, all these little circles, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, again, with the observations, what we're trying to do is say, these are sort of 15 observations that emerge in maybe, I don't know that successful is the right word, but like they're movements that are happening around the world. So yep. This is like one of those ideas that keeps popping up as like lightweight, agile systems. So that's really rich, all of those pieces that you just added to the conversation there. It feels obvious to me how the things that you just said are embodied in the Kansas City Underground, but I also live it, you know? Mm-hmm. So while it may be obvious to me, maybe it's not so obvious to those that are watching or listening. So as you think about the things that you just said, again, these ideas shaped us. Like when we were forming, it was like, we want to see a network that embodies that, whether that's when our leadership influencing team, our hub teams are getting together, or whether that's at a micro church level. But I don't know, what comes to mind when you think about the way that we've embodied that, like some bright spots, some places of hope where you're like, yeah, like we're doing that lightweight agile system. I see it here. I think about a story here. Is there one or two things that maybe come?
Yeah, I think it'd be fun for you to go first on that, and I'll go second. What are the bright spots for you?
This is your interview, man.
No, this is us. We're having a conversation.
Yeah. All right. I think as I listen to that and I think about the way that we're trying to operate as a family, I think one of the places would be our operations team and the way that we relate to each other. There's no one person in charge. Mm-hmm. That it's a flat leadership structure. So again, I'm, you know, thinking about the observation that 248 is making is we're promoting greater participation and ownership among all of our team members. Mm-hmm. So they say it leads to increased buy-in and commitment to the movement. And I don't think that, I mean, I think there are moments where one of us or two of us may feel a little left out or left behind, but usually we can voice that and go, hey, I'm lost on what y'all are talking about here. I need to be caught up. But when we meet, because there's sort of a North Star we're going toward of city movement, of seeing beauty, justice, and good news fill our city, we're telling stories about where we see that happen every time we get together first. Mm. We're not like getting together and going, all right, what do we do next? What do we accomplish? Who are we telling what to do either? But also there's the freedom within that smaller leadership team that may be offering some guidance, direction, breaking down barriers or walls, whatever that is, that, you know, I'm thinking of Corey right now pursuing something that he feels like, I think Jesus is leading our network this way. And I think there's potential movement over here with young adults in our city. And it's like, cool, man, love what you're doing. Tell us how to help. And there's the freedom to explore, and we'll put resources behind that potentially. But also there is the freedom to go, I don't know that we're going to put a bunch of resources behind that, but we love it. Keep going, you know? So I feel like that's one way that we've been agile, lightweight, flexible as we've kind of moved over the years. We talked a little bit about this last week. We've not been so committed to language that we're afraid to change it or edit it. Mm-hmm. Like we're willing to go, man, we used missionary for a long time, and now it feels like we're really leaning in more to the word disciple maker because it might set up a better foundation for holistic disciple making. Can we sort of use these words interchangeably for a while and see how they feel? So the vocabulary question is kind of being answered. Yeah, I don't know. Those are a few ways kind of at the network level.
Yeah, we do have a centered set that, you know, the original, I don't know, handful of people that founded the Underground, quote unquote founded, worked really hard to bring, like, okay, what's our mission? What's our vision? What's our centered set in terms of our orthodoxy and then the manifesto and our values? But I also think we've invited people to keep informing that without deconstructing it until it's not meaningful anymore. And because the centered set is small and tight and powerful, it draws people and they can own it. And yet there's so much space to creatively contextualize it and then to use different language to describe the same thing when it's important and necessary. And I think that's what allows for like a shared sense of identity that's strong, and yet we can be very diverse and very decentralized. And like one of the bright spots for me I was thinking about is, like from the beginning, when you think, okay, there was one hub team, that's a little circle that's beneath what was a little network of three micro churches and 72 missionaries. And that hub team was, you know, we were confused and learning things and adapting and getting more and more clarity on like, oh, here's what a missionary is and what a microchurch is and what a hub is. And then these little networks of microchurches. And it has been amazing to watch, like, okay, go from one hub team to 11 hub teams. And from three microchurches to 100 and something microchurches. And it basically has been this very simple like circle of circles that keeps reproducing, you know, and that is very refreshing. And there's been a spirit of co-laboring between the different hubs and networks of microchurches that has had conflict. It has had misunderstandings. So that's very present, but there is by and large just incredible like synergy and sense of like oneness, even though it's multiplied a lot and it's become more and more decentralized. And there hasn't been like a lot of large and in charge kind of voices or issues. There haven't been any like huge power plays of someone like trying to take over the network or rip it away. And it's just refreshing to be 5 years in and go, thank you, Jesus, that's amazing. But yeah, it gets back to like, what's your inner posture? And are we going to do the relational, emotional, and spiritual work of having the difficult conversations and holding the tension and doing the things in the private spaces with, you know, with Jesus and a few other people to grow up, you know? And, so I think about in my mind, I'm like, I've had probably four or five kind of Matthew 18 type conversations in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And an old version of me would have been, oh, this is so exhausting. Like, oh, it's not working. Oh, and it's like, no, actually, Jesus does his best work in conflict. This is, we're actually learning how to love each other. And that's what the circle, that's what the circle structure can facilitate, you know, is that kind of catalytic environment. And it feels to me like that's happening in a lot of different places. And that's really beautiful. So that's the highlight. I could just see like all these circles, you know what I mean? Like reproducing, and they are a network and it is a body. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, two other things came to mind while you're saying that is like the conversation I was on right before we started recording, hanging with two microchurch leaders that have seen multiplication. So there's like four or five of these microchurches now that are addressing like a very specific thing in our city. And Bree and I have just tried to meet regularly to say, you know, how can we support? And basically today's conversation was just another step and saying like, hey, we see some of the network stuff up here. Like you're starting to do that. And you're moving from, we were disciple makers that engaged the thing and saw a microchurch, and now more people are doing that and being able to speak in and go, actually, I don't know that we should be coaching you anymore on your microchurch. I think we're at the point where like we can give you some of these lightweight structures to go, we should be coaching you on building this structure so you can coach more of these leaders to do the same thing you're doing.
That's like, it, man. It's
you're like an emerging hub now.
Yep. A multi-generational. It's like, hey, you're becoming grandparents here or great grandparents, you know?
Yeah. And there's certain things you need. There's certain tools you need. There's certain ways to organize around that to like hold the thing. The other side of it.
It gets back to when you have a decentralized structure, it makes the need for equipping so much higher and the need for coaching so much higher. Because now for us, equipping is when there's a translation of skills like head, heart, and hand, where not only are you able to do this, but you're going to be able to help someone else to do this. And there are things that we need to know. We need to know how to practice forms of contemplative prayer and contending prayer. We need to know how to fast and how to have these rhythms, not just individually, but corporately. We need to know who people of peace are and how to find them and engage them. And we need to know, you know, all of these things like hospitality and what does that look like when it's embodied in my context, and gospel fluency and discovery groups and all these. I mean, there's a lot to pass on. And it goes from primarily like a teaching to inform to like an equip to release and send and multiply. And those are the things that the elders or the equippers, you know, we use our language to describe it, hub teams. That becomes the majority of what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The other side that was coming to mind was just the current posture we're in of moving to Underground 2.0. As we're affectionately calling it. But to go back to that idea that there's an original hub team of the quote unquote founders people. Now there's 11 and we that were there in the beginning are saying, I don't think it should be our voice that tells everyone where to go and what to do. But like now we need a we voice.
Yeah. And everybody in essence is a founder in the underground. It's a, like you're joining Jesus in your context with a partner or a team and what he's doing to restore and, you know, reconcile all things in there. So like you are as much a founder as we are.
Yeah.
And how do we maintain that spirit? You know what I mean? Of
equality,
and it, collaboration.
There may be 1,000 organizations that do this, but I've never been a part of one that 5 years in was like, hey, we're going to reform. And in 5 years from now, we might need to do it again.
Totally.
I mean, there's still some like centered set stuff, but like, I mean, you know, churches I've been a part of in the past, sure, we come up with new ideas and things that we're going to go do, but structurally everything stays the same. But we're like currently sort of in a season of curiosity and learning to say, if we do create sort of a new table with new voices, how will it strengthen us? Not losing what we've had, that's still like at the center set. But how will these new voices create a greater voice that can influence what we could do in the city?
Amen.
So, yeah, last question. I'm just going to circle back to the top of
Can I add one thing to that?
Yeah.
I think it would be helpful for people to understand. So there was the first hub team that we talked about. And what happened is over time, as micro churches began to add or multiply and new hub teams begin to emerge, and then we formally train them, and then they're like, hey, we are a hub in the Kansas City Underground and we're called Share the Hope or Serve or Rock Island, which is so exciting and amazing. It's like, whoo, look at that. It's one of those kind of waypoints. What happened is the original group was trying to be a hub in a very hyper local part of the city, but also then serving all the other hub teams, like a hub support team for all the other hub teams. And we actually kept spending more and more and more time doing that with less time on our hyper-local geographic focus where the missionaries and the microchurches are there. fortunately, a lot of those people were here from the beginning. And I think they had a sense of kind of selflessness, like, hey, we know what's going on and we're going to keep doing the work that God's called us to do. And we're not in some weird codependent relationship with you. Like, and everybody, and there still were training huddles and there still were coaching circles. But now we're basically saying that actually that happened and it was good and it was organic. Mm-hmm. But now it's led to a misrepresentation of the network. Mm-hmm. Where the First Hub team has kind of become this ops team for the whole underground, and it doesn't actually look like the whole network anymore. And it is the OGs, and that is actually an imbalance of power. And so we basically said the Shawnee Hub, which was the First Hub, is basically dying. And it, we grieved that for like,
yeah, we did.
6 months.
Yeah.
Easy. Like just going, oh man. And then also saying this team that was the Shawnee Hub and also kind of the ops team, this is actually going away. Mm. And it's been a year or more of kind of actually all of us going, can we let go of this? And let's, yeah. It's okay to be sad about it. And there is a season coming where this team will not exist anymore as it is. And it's been magic. It's been, we've had, it's been amazing. Like what?
Yeah.
Why does this, it's the, even right now, I'm like, I don't want that to happen. That's a bad idea. But, and we've started basically a year-long process where we invited all the hub teams to sit together as equals. We're focusing first on the inner posture and developing the skills we need to be a more diverse, like healed, reconciled community. And then we're starting the structure conversation. So we've relaunched the original hub as the Western Edge, which I think is helpful for people to know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That team is like really that hub team and that network of missionaries and microchurches, it's been a blast. Like they're like, we got our hub back, you know?
Yeah.
And we've been having, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we got together in someone's home and had a meal and just prayed together for an hour. And we've gathered together as a collective last Sunday to celebrate Easter. And it was incredible and so much joy and laughter and life. And then we've started a series of equipping gatherings, five of them that we've partnered with someone we really, really respect in our city to help us be, have some like trauma-informed skills. And it feels so amazing. Like, it's like, yes. We're in the middle of this process of saying, okay, there'll be a new table and we need it to look like the whole network, not just the original people. And we need to look and go, what are the seats we need to have at these tables, at the table? We know it's APEST, but there's mm-hmm. going to also be some other probably really practical functions to serve the network. And then discerning as a community, who needs to be at those seats?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the OGs. They don't automatically get a seat at the table. So all of us have had to say, like, it might not be good for us to be there. And this is what you could call organic hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like a traditional hierarchy is like, oh, of course all of us. I mean, we're all going to be at that table. I mean, but organic hierarchy is like, actually the hierarchy is changing and it can actually change in a conversation where it's like, oh, this is a shepherding conversation. So the shepherd here actually has more influence than the apostle or the evangelist. Look at the hierarchy, quote unquote, and it's more think of it as influence. It's like this person has to have more influence right now. And so we need to kind of look again and go, what's the organic hierarchy that the underground needs now, the people at that table? And they shouldn't get comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, you're not going to be there forever. No way. This network is constantly changing and adapting. And
yeah.
So yeah. I just wanted to fill that story in for people.
That's good.
Because I think it's helpful to go, oh, what are you talking about? It's like, that's what it looks like. We're saying we're kind of reforming and it's always, we'll always be reforming.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Man, I got three more questions now that I want to go into.
No. It's around 40 minutes, man. We got to wrap this thing up.
I am. Like high level overview what I wanted to go into was fractals, because I think that's a helpful conversation for people. But but people can go look up fractals and make up their own mind about that. If you had to go like, man, like skills needed, postures needed, for leaders who are thinking like, man, how, like you, again, you mentioned it sort of at the beginning, but if you're like, these are the two or three or four sort of postures or skills that you need to have if you're thinking about being lightweight and being able to adjust and move to see movement actually sustain. Like insecurity is not one of them. Like if you're insecure, you should probably start dealing with that, you know. Like what comes to mind as far as that?
I think beyond words about Jesus is, you know, creator, sustainer. He's literally holding the whole cosmos together. He's conquered sin, death, hell, and the grave. He literally went, you know, to the underworld. He's like, I got the keys to death. I got the keys to Hades, you know, and it's not even like a challenge for him. You know, it's hard for us to wrap our mind. And now he's in Jesus. Everything's being reconciled in heaven on earth. Like he is, without forcing anyone to do anything, he's playing like 10,000 dimensional chess with billions of people. And moving everything towards the reconciliation of heaven and earth, you know, and evil's going to be vanquished, and we get to be a part of that. And he treats us with so much respect and dignity. He's like, you're my friends. And we're co-laboring with Jesus, you know? And I think for leaders, like if you have a leadership gift and you've been in organizations where there is like a strict hierarchy, which is everywhere. And I'm not saying hierarchy should be, I'm not like an anarchist. I'm not against hierarchy, but I'm saying if we can, I mean, the first thing to work on is like, man, how do I treat other people the way Jesus is treating me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, to look at them and go, this is not a volunteer, you know, or this is not a donor, or this is like whatever those other kind of domesticating titles are, and go, you know, this is a co-laborer, you know, this is a partner. And like Jesus, like, oh, you're going to do greater things than I even did. And I actually believe that. Like, I believe that about you. I really do, man. And I believe it about so many people. And that's, if you can, you know, ask the Lord to give you that posture where Paul does that all the time, you know, with Timothy, he's like, I am a father to you. But there's this little verse hidden later on where he says, he's my co-laborer. And I like to think Timothy had to be like, bro, highlight that part of the letter. Did you see that? You know what I mean? Like, dude, he's like, I'm his equal. Like, I'm his co-laborer, man. And I think having that internal posture, instead of like a bad paternalistic kind of posture of people are all stupid and I got to figure this out and kind of let people know what to do and organize, you know, the sheep because they're, you know, I'm 10 times smarter than everyone else. It's like everybody around you knows so much more about other stuff that you don't know about. And if you're humble and curious, and Paul was really looking for others to become co-equal, co-workers with him, like Priscilla and Aquila and Timothy. And so that would be my one. I mean, that's the thing that's coming to mind to me today. That's the thing, man. If you can.
Yeah.
Remember how Jesus is treating you, and like, I don't deserve to be his dog or his pet turtle. And he's like, Rob, what do you think about this? Like, what? What? You care about what I think, Jesus? He's like, yep. That's my experience with him, man. And it's mind boggling, you know? So, and we talked about it today with New Thing. It's like, when you know you're the beloved, and experience that, it funds a humility in your life where it's like, I don't have to get all this affirmation from being better than other people. And as a three, that is a long, hard, constant repentance in my life. Cause I used to think I was like really smarter than most of the other people in the room. You know what I mean? And I needed to do that. I regret that. A lot of arrogance, man. Inadvertently was, putting a cap on a lot of things that weren't supposed to be there. So how about you? Like, what's your one thing?
That thing you said. I was really sitting here. I was like, I hope he doesn't say anything else. Cause I think I could walk away with that. Like personally, I'm just like, I gotta sit with that a little longer. How does that, that gift that you asked Jesus for in that field that you told us about, I'm not giving the whole story cause it's your story, but like, and I've been thinking about that. Like, how do I ask God for good gifts like that? To hear that you're like, he gave it to me. And it's what, like, after hearing you say that, I was like, I mean, I think I have some of that in me, but I'm going to walk away from this and go ask Jesus to give me more of that posture to see others in that way. Like, that's my I will is like, yeah, I mean, I have arrogant tendencies. I don't think I'm like a super arrogant person, but it's like, no, I need more of that desire to look at people and go, hey, what should we do next? What do you think? And then like receive that gift of wonder at like whatever they come up with is what Jesus was inspiring in them.
And sometimes like Paul, you got to go, hey, sleeping with your mom's a stupid idea, bro. You know what I mean? You're still a spiritual parent. You know, it's not goes, right? So
No, but, I appreciate that. That's fair.
Yeah, I'm not correcting you. I'm just like saying to everybody who's listening, you know, there is a maturation process and you're not forfeiting the wisdom, hard-fought wisdom that you have.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that's making it into this. Look up Corinthians, people. Look up Corinthians. All right, man. Thanks for the conversation. That was rich.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.